Hello again. Thank you for listening to KGVM FM 95.9 and KGVM.org. We are the Health and Happiness Program, broadcasting at 7 o'clock p.m. on Monday evenings and 9 a.m. on Thursday mornings. I am Dr. Arliss Wood with Dr. Suzanne Wood. I'm a psychologist. She's a speech-language pathologist. We host the program with support of the Public Education Committee of the Montana Psychological Association. Today's program is very pertinent to today's world. Dr. Suzanne now introduces the guests and the topic.
The American Psychological Association report, per their annual evaluation of America, shows political concerns which affect both mental and physical health negatively across a broad swath of the population topped the list of stressors on APA's 2024 Stress in America survey. 77% of Americans said the future of our nation was a significant source of stress. 41% of adults have considered moving abroad, and 1 in 20 are so distressed they've considered suicide. Today, we hope to speak about coping. How do we manage this? What can we do? Well, we have some grand and golden helpers with us today. We welcome Lisa Downing. In 2015, Lisa began exploring the science of well-being, ultimately earning a master's degree in applied positive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania. Most recently, she served as an instructor alongside Dr. Martin Seligman, a pioneer in the field, teaching undergraduates at Penn. Lisa integrates the science of flourishing into her life and college advising practice, guiding students to discover their strengths, explore purpose, and recognize that character holds more significance than test scores. We are also proud to have with us today Dr. Michelle McKinney, psychologist who is the Montana Psychological Association's member of the Council of Representatives to the American Psychological Association. As such, she represents all Montana psychologists at the national level. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks, Suzanne.
And welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Michelle, maybe we could start with you on addressing just any thoughts you might have off the top of this very serious topic.
Ooh, that's a big question. I'll see what I can do. I think the statistics you quoted, Suzanne, were really important for us to recognize that regardless of which side you are on in this political process, so many people in America are expressing concern. And it makes me wonder, kind of at a deeper level, what we are concerned about. I think it is easy to point at political strategies and such, but as I've thought about it, it makes me think about how divided we have become as a national community. And I wonder if some of that concern for the future is maybe rooted in some of the disconnections that we are feeling between our family members, friends, communities. That's one of the thoughts I have about this.
I couldn't agree more, because I feel like any amount of separation from your friends, your neighbors, your family members is stressful. It's painful. And I think everyone maybe just a few, but most everyone would really like to resume, reserve, and maintain relationships with everyone around us and try to pull this back to where we could be neighbors, friends, and close family members. And Lisa, dear, what might you like to present as your first thought about this long topic?
What I've noticed is that there's a loss of optimism and hope among some people, and that can lead to distress. And I guess what I'm talking about is more of a situational depression rather than a clinical depression. And you brought up connection, which I think is really important. I think it's one of the key things to happiness and well-being. Vivek Murthy, who our Surgeon General, has written a book called Loneliness and views loneliness as one of the major healthcare crises that we have here in the United States. And so I think if we're talking about coping, one of the things we can do is try to increase optimism and hope, but also build that connection, reach out to people. It doesn't have to be big. I mean, connection can be as simple as making eye contact with someone, or it's been proven to boost well-being. Epley is the guy who's done that research. So I really encourage people to not be alone in whatever they're going through.
And I think that's significant, that mending fences, opening up to everyone. I think for those who win, reaching out across the lane to those who didn't, and to those who lost, to look up and reach out and reconnect. We're all in this together, one way or the other. So pulling together would be absolutely good mental health.
I
think too, it's not just in our homes and in our neighborhoods, but this comes up everywhere in the job place. And a particular area of concern is with the children, who see a lot of emotion going on and who might be frightened or concerned, or who might not understand the need to be very helpful to those around them who aren't feeling so good.
Well, in fact, if you want a happiness hit, the quickest happiness hit, you said reaching out to other people, has been proven to be doing something for someone else. Simple acts of kindness. And when I say kindness, I mean doing something for someone else and not expecting anything in return. It can be something like just a compliment or volunteering or helping someone in some way.
Oh, and that's what several psychologists that I studied about in this effort were saying, that one of the best things you can do to make yourself feel better is to help one other person or as many people as you can feel better and kind of forget about yourself, kind of localized to the other's needs and feelings, go to the shelter and work for the lunchtime or the breakfast, go to the nursing home and take some flowers or cookies. Those things really benefit you more than those that you're helping.
I always get frustrated during elections because I think people would look at data, look at facts, look at research, and how wrong I am. I think that what I have heard and people discussing how this election and other ones have gone is really not to do with facts, data, trends. It has to do with feelings. In other words, for whatever my world, small or big as it is, the way I feel about something, for who knows, a complex number of reasons, that's the way I view it, my perception. And, for example, I know a lot of people who were distressed with how the election results. And then I was doing a veterans examination the other day, and the veteran says, I've been really depressed for a long time, but after my man won yesterday, I feel great. And I'm going, okay. So again, it just reinforced, it has, there are a lot of single issue people. They have one issue, and if a person voices that and comes in touch with whatever your own problem, your own issue is, usually a lot of other facts are blocked out. It has nothing to do with character of the candidate or what the research shows or any of that. It has to do with how, within one small world, what I'm feeling.
Yeah, and I think, Arliss, I appreciate that. I really appreciate sort of how this conversation is building on itself, because when we are disconnected, we really start to focus on ourselves, and I think our view can get quite narrow, and it's hard to remember that, like, we might remember it intellectually, but to really feel part of a larger whole and to be able to look at what's happened around us, whether it is something we're happy about or something we're unhappy about, in terms of election results, is that's what we're talking about today. And to see that, that yes, things are going to happen and things may change and we may not understand what those are and we may be excited about it or frightened about it, but that what's happening is part of a larger arc of society and a larger arc of the human process. And to be able to sort of step back and look and see what are the many conversations that are happening that I can try to pay attention to, not just the one issue, the single issue, but there's more. We're nuanced. Human beings are complicated, and there's a lot happening, and it's important to try to help everybody find a way to hold the whole story about what is happening right now.
Yes. Well, before all this ends today, I want to be sure everybody jumps in and tells me what are going to be our strategies during the holidays, because I can either go with a fist fight with somebody I know, or I can do reflective listening, or I can go and hide in the bathroom or whatever. So you guys help me out here before this is all over.
Sure, I've pulled some stuff off of the ABA Instagram account, Arliss, so I'm prepared when we get to that.
I just wanted to point out one other fact that the APA, the American Psych Association, presented, and that is a positive note, that this is situational, that this is not like you're not just an anxious overall person and a nervousy type person if you're worried about this. In other words, people who report feeling anxious about politics aren't simply people with high levels of anxiety overall. So you're in a situation right now that is anxiety provoking, but we will work through this and we need to try to do it. I think the most effective way to help everyone is to do it together.
I couldn't agree more. What you're saying is, you know, situational is a reaction to a specific life event, which has just happened, and a stressor. But it implies that once we adapt to the situation or receive support, that we return to our previous levels of happiness or well-being. This is to be, and I think Michelle and Arliss, you can speak to this more than I can, to be differentiated between clinical depression, which has a DSM diagnosis, so on and so forth. I think the thing to remember here is that we can get better. We can improve our mood. There are specific things that we can do to accommodate, rather than the downward negative spiral that can happen when we just focus on what we perceive to be negative. But there are things that we can do, and we're better off doing it together to improve our circumstances.
No, Lisa, I am deeply depressed. Just kidding. I think I realize it's situational, so I'm coming out of it.
And what are you doing to come out?
Being kind.
Well, I've got several things for those people listening that are specifics. This is from mindwise.org. Minimize your screen time. Don't just sit and watch the gloomy news or the good news. Go out and do other things. Avoid political arguments. Mm-hmm. And look out for feelings of depression and anxiety. We'll get to that soon. What do we do with that? Use happy, healthy distractions. One friend said she was going to go to a glass-making class and was really distracting herself to something positive. Try not to spiral. Do not catastrophize. Kind of pull back from that. You can see that happening. Don't go there. And then especially seek help when needed. And we'll talk about some of the signs in a bit that you might actually need to seek professional help if this is turning into something that's more clinical. And so we could take it from there, guys. What else do you want to add to that?
I'd like to add that I think to focus on what you do have control over, which can be very small things like we've been talking about, but even in our own lives, like keep your routines, make food that you like, healthy food that you like to eat, spend time with your friends, get outside for a walk or go to the gym if that's what you prefer. Like I think knowing that we have control over certain aspects of our lives and focusing on those can really help us tolerate the uncertainty of the things we have much less control over.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Frying up a perfect egg and adding a little salsa is good for mental health, right?
It surely is.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the holidays and Thanksgiving coming up. And Arliss and I have already perfected a phrase we're going to use around the table. You guys want to hear?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Do share.
Well, we'll let you guys tell us if this works or not. So something comes up and we're going to say, gosh, I'm so tired of politics. What are you guys doing for Christmas?
Nice.
So what, acknowledge and change the subject, huh? And if that doesn't work, what? I don't know. What comes next?
Well, I'm going to return to hobbies.
Go ahead, Lisa.
You said your friend took up a glass blowing class mm-hmm. or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so ask yourself, what sparks joy, to use a Marie Kondo phrase? And think about those things that you just love doing, maybe particularly where you lose track of time. Michael Csikszentmihalyi is the person behind this research, but it's called flow or engagement. And try to engage in those activities, which will naturally increase and boost your happiness and well-being. Kind of a diversionary tactic, which mm-hmm. I think has already been mentioned.
One problem I have is the person I'm thinking about mainly that might be a problem. I don't really care talking about it. That he goes hunting with his AR-15, stuff like that. But I'll have to really try to be creative to come up with something this particular person likes to talk about.
Well, and it might be good to get an ally. I mean, you and Suzanne can be allies to one another, but maybe you could co-opt a third ally in the things we are going to try not to go too deeply into. And come up, you know, talk about, hey, I just picked up this new hobby, or wow, these mashed potatoes sure are good, or you know,
yeah.
I mean, I think there are ways that you can just change the subject, and hopefully other people will pick up on that change, so you don't have to shut somebody down directly at the table.
Yeah, Sarah Moniesco, one of the lifestyle reporters at CBS News, was giving us some cues. She said, you could say, now that the election is over, I'm so looking forward to not talking about it anymore. Or you could say, I wish there were a different outcome, but let's agree We need to accept the results and try our best to find common ground between us. Or, I think it is better for our relationship if we avoid talking about the election. Or, let's move on, shall we?
And then I think maybe have a few questions to move on to.
Oh, yeah. And they said, if they persist in discussing it, have a backup activity like a game, a holiday activity, or a shared project to redirect the group's attention.
Do something together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my favorite traditions I've noticed people doing lately, and there's lots of research to support that gratitude is a very useful practice to engage in terms of helping prevent depression or treat depression, is to have people go around the table and talk about one thing that they're really grateful about. I think sometimes that can help us find some areas. We talk about this when how to disagree or what to do when you disagree politically. If you can find those areas where you do agree, that is a place where you can try to deepen a conversation, whether it's about how your children or the tasks your children are doing or activities and successes or things like that.
You think that might be better than having duct tape handy to put over one's mouth?
That's tempting.
No, those are great, Michelle and Lisa, and we just all need to be thinking about this ahead of time.
Yeah, I'd like to dovetail. I think Michelle makes a really, really wonderful point. And gratitude, you know, the field of positive psychology is about what makes life worth living, what increases our well-being, our happiness, our life satisfaction, many, many definitions. But gratitude is one of those things that's really been proven to increase well-being. And in the field of positive psychology, it's scientifically, using scientific methods to study what increases well-being. And one of the things to add on to what Michelle suggested, which I think is fabulous, you know, going around the Thanksgiving, maybe that's what Thanksgiving is about, right? Say what we're thankful for, is to start a practice. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard of Three Good Things, where every time, every night, or for some people it's a morning, sometime in the day, that they make a practice of reflecting on three good things that happened during that day. And that's been proven to increase your happiness, increase your sleep, you know, improve your mood, and so on and so forth. But another positive intervention that maybe your listeners haven't heard of, and is actually one of the favorite ones I found with students, you know, teaching this last semester, is the gratitude letter. Are you guys familiar with that?
No, it sounds intriguing.
So what you do is think back over your life and think of someone who had a profound impact on you. I mean, for me, it was, I went to live with a family for half a year in high school. And I saw what a normal family, I mean, they like each other, they're kind to each other. I mean, it was just a huge epiphany for me. And I had never really thanked that mom, and she never knew what an impact she had. So with the gratitude letter, and this has been really well studied, you sit down and you write about 500 words. You physically write the letter and then call up the person and say, I'd like to come see you. This is best done in person, you know, if you can't over Zoom, but the best results are in person. And then go and read the letter to whoever you are thanking. And, you know, we're not very good at receiving gratitude. We're, you know, oh, no, 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 it was easy, it wasn't me, it was really you. And when they start to do that, you know, just ask them to let you finish the letter. And what we find is that the gratitude letter can increase happiness and well-being for up to 6 months. There's a little fall off after the first month, but it really has a profound impact, more so on the person who wrote the letter, also on the person who receives it. I mean, that old adage, better to give than receive, has really been proven out with science. So, you know, if you're looking for a diversion or something that you can do, that might be something you want to take up. And then when you're gathering at Thanksgiving, maybe think of somebody who's going to be there who you'd like to thank.
So write about what you're grateful that other people have accomplished, provided, done with or for you, and then share it with them. So extrapolating a little bit around the Thanksgiving table, you could even have a prepared a statement about something you love about each person that helped you.
I think that's brilliant.
And then that would pick up, you know, to let them interact. So, Lisa, that I'm going to do. I'll report in the next time we're all on how it worked. And I'm also going to have the duct tape in my purse. No!
You know, I think I love that idea. Thank you for sharing that, Lisa. And I think what I've been speaking with some of my patients about and, you know, and really recognizing is that sometimes we can be grateful for hard things in our lives as well. And I think that this current election result for some people, I actually think for all of us, it's going to create challenges in one way or another. You know, it's easy to be sort of smug and self-satisfied if our guy won. And really, I know there are a lot of people who are very, very frightened because they actually are in circumstances that feel very threatening in a legitimate way. And I think once we get over the initial reaction, positive or negative, we are all going to be left with this question of, okay, so now who are we going to be in the face of the world as it is? And I think that for me, I'm already starting to see that I can be grateful for this opportunity at this point to really recognize that if we are going to recover as a nation, we've got to figure out how to come together and work together, even when we have differences that feel very profound. Because I think in reality, we have more similarities than differences across the political aisle. But it's an opportunity. So am I grateful for, like, if I am someone whose guy didn't win, am I grateful for the election? Maybe not initially. But it gives me an opportunity to write a larger version, a story, a larger narrative of who am I going to be in the world now? Who does the world need me to be? Who do I need myself to be in order to make this country actually feel unified? How do I move that needle in that direction?
I really appreciate that, Michelle. And I wonder if you could think with me, looking from the perspective of those, for instance, who won this election, their guy won. But their neighbors across the street might have had signs for the other guy and are very disappointed. So how does one who's the victor reach out and reconnect with those who didn't win and might feel fairly crushed or angry or, you know, it's prickly? How can we reach out in a?
I think other people might have some things to say too, Suzanne. But I really appreciate your question because I think it requires us to. I mean, we've all lost something at some point. We've all, or our team. You know, I know people, or some people are diehard football fans, right? The team doesn't always win, and some of us take that very deeply, and we all know what it feels like to lose. And I think it's an opportunity for those who are on the winning team, whose team won this time around, to be able to recognize that it doesn't feel good to lose and to have some compassion and remember that we are neighbors and we still need each other as humans, and to reach out from that perspective, that we may not agree, but it doesn't feel good to lose. We can be good winners, right? We can be good winners, gracious winners and gracious losers. We all hopefully learned how to do that in kindergarten.
And I think that's excellent, Michelle, and maybe even to extrapolate to that, is to write down, like, how can I be a good winner, right? How can I be a good loser? You know, who am I at my best? And to actually put pen to paper, I think that would help a great deal too.
Yeah, I like that idea, Lisa.
I think sometimes enlisting another person's help brings down their defenses. And so if you, as a winner, perhaps could say, you know, you're such a good gardener. What am I going to do with this plant I have that's kind of sickly? You know, find a way to connect with them that would let them be helpful and kind to you, and be totally away from all political
concerns. Well, you know, there's science behind that, too. That actually, if you want someone to become your friend, don't do something for them. Ask them to do something for you.
Yeah.
And that builds the bond quicker than the other direction.
Tap into their expertise. You probably know enough to know the things they feel really good about, and you could ask for help in any of those areas. So, yeah, a lot of what we're saying today, we're not mentioning all the credits, but a lot of this is very, very research-based and shown to be terrifically helpful, workable, and functional, and needed. And so I wanted to take a minute. I'd like to get to children in a minute here to talk about how to help them, but I wonder, why don't we just go ahead and talk about children right now. So, one school announced this week that students who felt too distressed by the election results would be allowed to skip classes. And two political experts have said that this might be helpful to children. So, how do we talk to our children about what has happened if they're feeling concerned or frightened?
That's a great question, Suzanne. Because of what I think about is how frightened are the parents? And again, I think there are some individuals living in the United States who have some legitimate fears about their future and uncertainty about the safety of their future. I think it's important to find ways to talk to children about reality, and, you know, not sort of make something up that makes the scary thing go away, but to really talk about it in terms of, yes, something hard might happen, and we as the adults around you who care about you are going to make sure that you are okay, that we are okay, you know, to really take that protective stance with children and help them understand the complexities of what is happening around them. I'm not a huge fan of kids skipping school for too long, because I think, again, that having a routine, being in a routine is helpful psychologically for all of us, but particularly for children. So obviously if a child is distressed enough that they're not able to focus, then I think working on some positive distractions and helping them re-regulate is fine. But ultimately, a routine is also important for children, too.
Yes, and the school, I wanted to just point out, had all kinds of mental health activities prepared for the very next day and focusing the kids on positive things. So I guess they just gave them that first day, if any needed it, but then they really jumped on that.
I think you all
That's
are
great.
Making the point that the children's feelings are probably a direct reflection of those who are caretaking for them, and so that would be the focus of those adults with children, that they have to be sure that they're going to be positive and reassuring, and that the children are going to be safe, and I think you all have said that. Very excellent point.
You know, emotions are contagious, right? And this actually comes, you were asking about research from the Framingham study. If I have a friend who has a friend who's overweight, I'm 25% more likely to be overweight. Similarly, if I have a friend who has a friend who has a friend who's negative, that's going to impact me. So again, just to underscore, I think what we're all saying here is that, you know, parents can help their children by monitoring more positive behavior.
Or I can blame my overweight on my wife.
Or you blame it on me.
Blame it on Lisa, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I know
she's
Dr.
a pretty good cook, Arliss.
Dr. McWilliams-Barnes advised the 5-4-3-2-1 technique, which might be fun for parents out there. It encourages children to identify 5 things they can see, 4 things they can touch, 3 things they can hear, 2 things they can smell, and 1 thing that they can taste when they're overwhelmed, and it redirects them and helps them unfocus from the stresses that they're diving into. So that was just one little suggestion for children.
That's great.
I think kids can also participate in gratitude exercises. I think that's a nice sort of bedtime routine to ask what was your favorite thing about today? Or that can really help children get into the practice. And most children, if the parents are asking the child to do it, the parent better be prepared to do it too. So which is great because it can build in the structure around appreciating moments and not just like training your mind to look for the positive things in the day.
I think it's a good thing to do maybe at the dinner time to kind of institutionalize it in your home life and to go around the table and ask, what are you thankful for? And in the same way, I think that children can practice gratitude, I think they can also participate in kindness. So to ask, what was a kindness that you did for someone today?
Our grandchildren go to a school, and it's monitored by the Friends. And that Quaker group, the Friends, but each child is not called a student, they're called a friend. And their friends are called friends. So when the teachers call the class together, they say, come along, friends. And everybody is a friend. So they've already labeled everyone in there in a positive way. Everyone is my friend. And I found that to be one of the most positive things. And I love the idea of focusing on the positive and what we're grateful for, like every night. That could be part of what kids do at bedtime. What was your favorite thing or a good thing that happened today? And get them in the habit of looking for that and thinking about that.
You know, take that a step further. You know, gratitude is mostly rooted in the present or the past. But to also ask, what are we looking forward to, can inspire hope and optimism. So I think maybe that's a potential, another question.
What I noticed with that particular school with our grandchildren in Brooklyn is that in the Friends school, they're very tolerant of differences. It's not just their own ideas or their own approaches, but they're very, very receptive of children who have differences who come into the school.
Nice.
Yeah. I think about people, I recently had an opportunity to speak with some parents of children who were born with a chronic severe illness, a cystic fibrosis. And one of the things that we talked about was what we focus on defines our lives. And there's actually a type of treatment, narrative exposure therapy, that really works mm-hmm. around trauma and recovering from trauma. But basically what the research shows is that if we sort of the highlights of our day or the highlights of the story of our lives as parents or as humans are, well, I had this trauma at this age and I had this trauma at this age and last week there was this trauma, that what that does is it creates a very traumatic, distressing life. And focusing on the positive, I want to be really clear about this. Focusing on the positive doesn't mean denying the bad things. I think what I talk with people about is we want to tell the whole story so that the positives can balance the negatives and really try to develop a story of who we are that we can hold all of it. That, you know, that we have a large enough story about who I am in the world, who I'm going to be. You know, some of these women, I said to them, wow, I think you're warriors, really, that you are advocating for your children, that you are tackling these battles as they come. And I think we can say the same thing about how people are feeling this week after the election results, that we can focus on the whole story and see how we want to place ourselves in that in order to be able to forward our lives in a positive direction.
Just excellent. I wanted to mention one more positive thing we should all do that hasn't been mentioned yet. There's nothing that frees my mind and clears my mind and helps me feel better again than exercise, physical exercise. So if you're really, really down, or the kids, going for a walk, going for a run, doing a workout, going to the gym, going to swim, just wanted to mention those things are just almost like an instant mood developer, very positive.
I think also getting good sleep.
Yeah.
Right? 7 to 9 hours. And you know, I work with teenagers, so a lot more than that for teenagers.
Yes. Oh, yes. So maybe we'll do a program about sleep coming up here pretty soon. That's a whole topic.
Yeah,
that's a big one.
It's the same with meditation and mindfulness, I think. Mm-hmm. Both of those have been well researched and can be helpful.
Yeah, there's so much that's very helpful. I hate to go here after our positive talk, but I'm just wondering, because of the APA saying some people are so upset and actually do need help, I wondered if we could talk about if someone out there is so worried, that how do we know when they need to go and seek professional help? Maybe talk to a counselor, maybe get some medical support. So how do we know when it's time, Michelle and Lisa and Arliss?
Well, I think if you are not enjoying things that used to be enjoyable to you, if you find that you're really ruminating like over and over again, kind of getting caught in a negative spiral, if you're starting to feel really badly about yourself, feeling inadequate, or like the world would be better without you in it, I think those are some moments where it would be helpful to seek assistance of your doctor or nurse practitioner or a therapist.
And also here in the city in Southwest Montana, there's the help center or the helpline, and then there's always the 988 for the most serious ones, or if you just want to be able to express feelings. And even though we oftentimes think of these lines, if one is feeling some current imminent threat of suicide or something like that, it's not necessarily for that. It's for people who are seeking assistance, and they have many resources at their fingertips that they can refer you to.
You can actually go to the help center also during the daylight hours, daytime hours, and just step in and talk to a counselor. You can call 411 or 988, and those numbers will direct you to the help center or to help. And so what we've found out about people in deep depression and becoming, as Lisa said, thinking the world might be better without them, is that's very untrue. And sometimes just a little light, just a little outreach will help them to reach back in and rejoin us. And so we all need to be aware of those around us who might be way down. Arliss? and we need to actually be considerate of others around us and what they might need.
There's something in the DSM-5 that we could use a criteria for major depressive disorder, for example. If one has some of the following symptoms, like depressed mood or diminished interest in pleasure, significant weight loss, insomnia, if you're getting very agitated, or in, at the other end of that, just feel like you can't get up and move and you're not looking forward to meeting the day, or fatigue, loss of energy, feelings of worthlessness, concentration problems, or if you are preoccupied with very negative things like thoughts of death and so forth. But those are things, for example, that psychologists and counselors look at. And these are also, if you find that they've been, these symptoms have been present for like a, at least a 2-week period and represent a change in your previous functioning, like 5 or more of the things that I just mentioned. So that's kind of from the literal point of view, from how psychologists often and counselors look at trying to help people know if, in fact, something is becoming clinical rather than maybe just transitory.
And again, from the APA, if you have low energy, insomnia, difficulty focusing, nervousness, shaking, ringing in the ears, tense muscles, and associated joint pain, any of those additional symptoms might be a clue to call the help center, call a family member, and they'll help try to reach out.
How is the mental health system going here in the city, Michelle? Is it, I know there's been kind of a waitlist backup, but I know one can get more immediate help, like 988, or you can go, if it's that serious, to the emergency room. What would you suggest?
Oh gosh, I don't think I am the most up to date on the current status of things in Bozeman anyway, Arliss. But I do know that there are always the resources of the hospital and the 988 or 211 to get to the Bozeman Help Center. And I mean, we have lots of counselors and psychologists in town. I do think that their people are often very full, which suggests to me what I think we're seeing nationally is there is a mental health crisis. So I think if people are really not feeling well, their doctor or the hospital is a good place to start, because that gets you through the door, and that can often be the hardest thing to do, right, is to have the courage to get yourself through the door.
Tell us what you do in your group.
Oh, in my group in Bozeman?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We do primarily individual therapy, some couples therapy as well, with teenagers, you know, as young as 12, all the way through the lifespan. So I work with people who are in their 70s and sometimes 80s, doing individual therapy. That's what we do right now. And we're actually hoping to bring on some more providers here. We do training. So if we work with people who have their degree, either their master's degree or their doctorate, and they're not yet licensed independently in the state, and we train people to do good, high-quality therapy and to help people.
Michelle, could you tell us where you're located and give us a phone number?
In the name of your group?
For anyone out there?
Yeah, sure. It's the Big Sky Psychological Consortium, the mouthful. So our website is bigskypsychology.com, and our main office phone number is 406-586-3301, or you can contact us through our website, that bigskypsychology.com. We have two locations. We have an office on the west side of town over by the main ridge, the gym over there, and then we have a location on the east side of town not too far from the hospital.
So. Aren't you an approved internship site?
Well, not we. The Board of Psychologists in Montana approve has said that we can train postdocs. Yeah, people who already have their degree and postmasters. The Board of Behavioral Health has approved us for that. We're not APA accredited.
Thanks, Michelle. I'm glad people are there. We might have you repeat the phone number again in a few minutes so people can grab their pencil. I wanted to also mention that Community Health Partners here in town has counseling, and they're on a sliding scale basis. And so check into Community Health Partners, and they welcome anybody to show up at the doorstep. They'll help you whether you have any insurance or not. And they provide mental health care as well. We're hoping that everybody can get back on an even keel in Montana, but sadly enough, there were many already. Montana is one of the very top states for suicide, for depression, unfortunately. So for those of you out there who were already depressed, this might be an additional situation. So let's just be aware there's lots of help available, lots of resources. And also for those of you out there thinking about going to school, to college, we need more counselors, more psychologists, more care providers in this area. There's a desperate shortage, and so there can be waiting times, unfortunately, but if you go to the hospital, they will provide care, and they're opening up. They were on board with us talking about a new psychiatric, psychological, mental care unit that they're developing just for this very need.
Awesome. I guess I'd like to say that, and this research comes from Sonia Lubominski, it's a mouthful, out of UC Riverside, is that 50% of our well-being is heritable, meaning that we inherit it. It's kind of set in our genetics. 10% is situational, but 40% is within our control and can be cultivated. So I just want to offer some hope and optimism. It does take some effort to, you know, make those connections and maybe write a gratitude letter or incorporate many of these things that we've talked about, exercise, meditation. I also want to mention music, because that naturally increases dopamine and the lyrics themselves can be encouraging, and media like movies and positive books. So I just want people to know that there is a reason to be optimistic, even if they're not too happy right now.
That reminds me, Suzanne and I often sit around in the evening and we have different series on TV, Netflix, or perhaps Amazon Prime, in which we find something very uplifting. Two I found recently, I say recently, last year, have been something called Midwives. I think it's called The Midwives.
Yes.
And it always has a theme to the story, always a socially redeeming theme and very positive. Another one is called Good Doctors, or The Good Doctor. It's about an autistic surgeon, of all things, a person who got all the way through medical school, had help, but it's just amazing, and his surrounding medical docs and others. But anyway, I usually don't always say always about anything, but always find that I'm encouraged and mood lifted after watching an episode of these. Their writers are brilliant. I'm not sure they've won some awards, I think.
Many.
But anyway, for those out there listening who wants to watch something, The Good Doctor, and I think it's called The Midwives.
Called The Midwives,
yes.
And it was based on a British novel written by a midwife. And so it delves into topics like we are now that can be very difficult to navigate, but talks about how do you navigate, and shows strengths and weaknesses that we all have and helps us all. And I think The Good Doctors is very similar. So those might be fun watching for you out there. I'm sure there are many others. Those are just two that we recommend currently.
Also, anything that can make you laugh?
Oh, yes, humor.
Just good medicine.
Years ago when I did child psychotherapy, there was something called the mutual storytelling technique. And it was a book and a method by a psychiatrist who specialized in working with children. But we would have, you'd sit down with the child and have the child make up a story. And then you ask, well, what is the beginning? And is there something in the middle? And how would you end this? And then you'd help the child, whatever the ending was, even if it might be bleak, is restructure that and help it move to something very positive. Like, let's see, what else could be a positive moral to the story? And you'd help the child develop his or her own control over what the ending was going to be or what the theme would be or what it could be in a hopeful way. So parents, you might think about that. Just having your child make up a story, listen to it, but help the child make it positive, not leave it on a bleak ending.
Awesome.
We have about 2 minutes, two or three. What have we not talked about? I want you all to know if Suzanne and I make another program after Christmas, you know that we survived and that I didn't do anything. I'm kind of impulsive at times, so I didn't do anything really, really mean. Or I'm going to work on some of these things. I love the idea of writing down things about each person we know is going to be there, including this protagonist that I'm thinking of.
And by the way, I'm going to carry the duct tape along for Iris. Yeah.
But since I know this guy probably carries a gun in Texas, I'll be real careful about what I say.
I have one quick thing, and it's really easy. Positive affirmations.
Yes.
And so I actually write these on my mirror. So when I wake up, I see them. Like good things are ahead, or I am not alone, or I seek out kindness and support in moving forward. Whatever resonates with you to kind of start your day or wherever you walk past that message, bring you back to perhaps a more optimistic focus.
And there's something so functional about writing it down. There it is. And you've...
Oh, one thing we've missed. When Susan and I do these shows, so we sometimes pre-record them, we always do it, it seems, at the kitchen table in our home. And we have a loving therapy dog that sits with us, curls up, and I oftentimes am petting this dog during the time that we're talking, as I'm doing right now. There are two reasons for doing that. One, she likes it. One, it keeps her from interrupting the program. And third, because it's good for me.
Pets are wonderful.
Yeah.
So what final word you guys have?
Well, I'm going to build on the gratitude and the words of affirmation idea here. And I think even for your difficult protagonists or antagonists, our list that you're thinking about, there's something about opening our own hearts up and really finding something we appreciate in another person, whether we share it or not, although it's like Lisa said, it's better to give than receive. So, I think sharing it is good, but it helps us get to that warmer, more open-hearted place where maybe we can approach the holidays with a little bit of a love or a little bit of warmth, and that might go a long way.
And I would just like to emphasize the value of connection, of reaching out to people and not being alone in whatever you're feeling.
I would just say that helping someone, anyone, in any way, or even helping a stray dog that you find, anytime you reach out to help another, it helps you more than that person. It's really a selfish act, but a fun one.
As we close the program, we tell the Gallatin Valley audience and Southwest Montana audience that be kind. I hear that so often as a theme in how we survive in our species. And so be kind as we close this program from KGVM 95.9 or kgvm.org. And you can go there, listen to this program over and over as it's put on our website in the archives. So good evening, good day. We'll see you later.